Hello and welcome to our podcast Southern Solitudes, where we tell you the story of The Heart is a Lonely Hunter by Carson McCullers. Today we will talk about chapters 1 and 2 of part 3. I'm Chloe and I will be recapping chapter 1 and Alex will summarize chapter 2. Buckle up now, it's story time! Chapter 1 begins as Dr. Copeland was lying in bed from being sick. Portia came in and told him it was time to go. He had to move out of the house to live outside the city on a farm with Grandpapa. He was still sad of Singer's death, as he grieved deeply the only white man he fully trusted. He thought about how it was the end, how he'd lost the fight and couldn't become a renowned doctor. He was sad that he lost everything. He had studied hard to become a doctor. Portia changed his shoes and Copeland told her it was her fault. Portia answered back what she had done to him again. He said she made her take the decisions of moving out when he was in no fit condition to be questioned. Now he wanted to stay. Portia got angry and told him he always has to fight about something, and how they could not pay the rent. He replied back and said he could always find a way around and finally asked her for forgiveness. He said he was mourning Singer's death and that he had failed. So he asked her to give him some time before coming and moving away from the house. He questioned himself about Singer and his dispute with Jake. When he finally was ready to leave the house, he struggled to get up from his chair because his legs had gotten used to not walking. He felt dizzy and thought he would fall. He walked through the house and saw that every room was empty. It felt bizarre to him to see a house he once lived in left with nothing but dust. Many friends had come to say goodbye beforehand, but now only the family was left. The wagon and the automobile were waiting. Copeland wanted to go in the wagon. On the way there, Copeland said that he would be back in a month or two. Copeland was sad that he hadn't fulfilled his life mission he spent 40 years for. Grandpapa asked if Dr. Copeland could treat his leg. Copeland said he would do what he could. Then Copeland started saying how he would find justice for them black people and he would fight to the end. That was all for the first chapter and we will now have Alex summarize chapter 2. Let's go!
Now for chapter 2, it was the same day in the afternoon and Jake was running away. There had been a fight. It started with a provocative white man. Everyone was also drunk, and then a black person got out a pocket knife. Jake Brown jumped on his back to stop him, and then his fight between two people became one big fight. He yelled out for the police, but there was none. He fought back, but reinforcements arrived. He ran for 4 blocks until he encountered Sims, a priest who told him he would repent of his sins. Jake retaliated by talking back and then walking away. Jake was angry because of Singer's death. He said so many things to Singer, and now all these thoughts seem so lost. He ran to his room and locked the door when he entered. He felt the need to escape. He started packing his suitcase. He thought about how Copeland told him to never stand alone, and thought about seeking help from him. He went to Copeland's house, but when he arrived, it was empty. He decided to go see Portia at Kelly's house. When he arrived, he asked Portia where Copeland was, and she answered that he was very sick, so they took him to the countryside. When he got out, the rain was pouring down, and Jake could only think of one place to go, the New York Cafe. When he entered, Biff was already waiting, reading his newspaper. He asked Jake why he had a suitcase. Jake ignored the question and then asked for some supper, and Biff told him it'd be ready in 30 minutes. Jake felt empty. Then Biff arrived with his supper. Jake asked how much he owed him. He sat at the table across from him. Biff said he read the newspaper. He asked what he would do now. Jake responded that he would leave for a while. Biff went back to the counter. Jake asked how long the rain would last. Biff didn't have an answer. Jake slowly fell asleep on the table. But then he was woken up by Biff. He had had a bad dream and was agitated. He dreamt that he was in a crowd of people, and they all looked like they hadn't eaten in days. The crowd never seemed to stop walking. Meanwhile, he was carrying a heavy basket, which was the burden he had carried for so long. Biff asked what the dream was. Jake didn't respond. He got up and looked at himself in the mirror, wiped off his sweaty face, and combed his mustache. He said the dream was nothing. Jake wanted to go, but Biff held him back. Jake said he had to get out of town before it was dark. Beforehand, Biff gave him an envelope with 2 $20 bills. Jake said he'll never forget Biff's kindness. He left and started walking. He walked until he reached the railroad tracks and saw poorly maintained houses. The sight of poverty made him feel hopeless and angry. He reached the edge of town. Cars were passing by. No one stopped for him. Maybe sooner or later his life would start getting better.
So that was all for today's episode. We truly hope you enjoy spending time with us, and we hope to see you for the final episode of our podcast, Southern Solitudes. See you next time!
Good morning and welcome back to Between the Pages, the podcast where we discuss interesting chapters from books we have read, while sharing our thoughts and explain our different points of views.
I am Mira.
And I am Nora. And each week in our project Southern Solitudes, we talk about a book that we enjoyed, discussing our interpretations and the questions it raised. For today, we've chosen the first novel by Carson McCullers, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter.
Today, we'll be talking about the third and fourth chapters of Part 3, which is very special because everything happens in just one day, August 21st, 1939.
Exactly. Each chapter follows a different character, and we see how they deal with Singer's death and their own loneliness.
In Chapter 3, we return to Mick, but now she's not the same girl we saw before. Now she's living a much more adult life.
Yes, she works all day at Woolworth, and on this particular day, she even has to stay for overtime, which makes her extremely tired.
After her shift, she goes to the New York Cafe and orders a chocolate sundae and a beer. That combination is interesting because it shows the mix between her childhood and her new adult life.
Exactly, and while she is there, she starts reflecting on her life. And there are two things that she cannot fully believe, that she is now working full-time and has grown up, and that Singer is dead.
That second part is very important, because even if life continues, his death still feels unreal to her.
From a psychological point of view, she's experiencing a kind of disconnection between her present reality and her emotions.
This is also clear when she thinks about her inside room, which represents her inner world, imagination, and love for music.
Yes, and now she feels like she's locked out of that room. She doesn't know if it is because her job makes her too tired or too tense, or if it's just part of growing up.
That doubt is really sad, because it shows how she's losing touch with a part of her identity.
But at the same time, there is still some hope. She has not completely given up on her dreams.
Exactly. She's determined to save money. First to finish paying for the radio, and then to buy a piano.
And that plan shows a strong sense of resilience. Even if her life has become harder and more limited, she still holds on to her dreams.
So her character is very complex here, because she's both disillusioned and hopeful at the same time.
Yes, and that contrast makes her one of the most human characters in this part of the novel.
In Chapter 4, we follow Biff Brannan late at night in the cafe.
The atmosphere here is very quiet and reflective. Biff is alone, arranging flowers in the window, and he even thinks that his work looks artistic.
That small detail is important because it shows how he finds meaning in simple, everyday actions.
He also wonders why he keeps the cafe open all night, even though there are almost no customers between midnight and 5 in the morning.
And he then realizes that the night gives him a sense of calm. It's a time for thinking, for observing, and for reflecting on life.
This really fits his personality, because he's a character who processes everything internally, through silence and observation.
He then starts thinking about his past, especially about the women he has loved.
And also about the strange connection he felt with Mick, which is something that has changed after Singer's death.
That change shows how Singer's presence was connecting people in ways that they did not fully understand.
Yes, and now that he is gone, those connections are weaker or even broken.
Biff also thinks about Singer's suicide, trying to make sense of it.
But he cannot find a clear answer, and it remains a mystery, just like for the other characters.
Then, at the very end, he has some kind of epiphany when he looks at himself in the mirror.
He seems to realize, from his point of view, that love and work are the two things that give meaning to human life.
But what I find interesting is that this realization is very fragile.
Yes, it only lasts for a moment. He does not fully explain it, and then he just continues with his routine, preparing for the next day.
so even this moment of clarity is not enough to change his life completely.
Which fits perfectly with the general tone of the novel, and what is interesting in part 3, in my opinion, is that Singer's death does not bring clarity.
Instead, it creates more confusion. Each character is left alone with their thoughts.
They all continue their lives, but nothing is really resolved, which leaves the reader liberty to imagine their own ending and shows that loneliness is not fixed by one person. Each character has to face their own reality.
The structure is also important. Each character is like a different voice, like in a piece of music, and how they're all playing different parts, but not really together.
Exactly, and that connects again to the title, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter.
Each person is searching for meaning, but they do it alone. That's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening.
And see you next time on Between the Pages.